Pickaxe.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Folks, welcome to Dungeons and Randomness. Since 2012, myself and an amazing cast of 18 have been telling stories in our homebrew world of Theria. Four different groups explore lost ruins, run for political office, rage against a mad king, set sail to long-forgotten islands, and so much more. Every group has a different story and flavor, and every season, or arc, has a new set of groups and stories, all building the history of our world with every single session. Literally hundreds of hours of stories are waiting for you as part of the Pickaxe Network. Check out Dungeons and Randomness wherever you get your podcasts, and we'll see you around the table.
Hello, and welcome back to the Review of Death, your fortnightly home for Doctor Who news and reviews, although we're weekly now because it is new Doctor Who time. So I'm Matthew Toffolo. I'm joined as ever by Billy Garrett-John. How are you doing, Billy?
I am very, very well, thank you. And I am very, very glad to see our faces on YouTube live now. Third time is the charm, Matt. And
hey,
we've managed to get this going.
Hey, it's just because some dopey sod, a.k.a. me, had it set as private. So
sausage.
Yeah, we were just broadcasting to ourselves. How are you doing? You all right?
Yes, mate. I'm really, really well, thank you.
Good, good.
I've had a funny day of very much filled with Doctor Who, and last night was also sort of Doctor Who-rific, because I think we've spoken about it before, but the lead-in time between becoming really, really excited suddenly about Doctor Who coming back and it actually coming out, that seems to be getting shorter and shorter.
Yeah.
So I'm now looking at a sort of 6-hour window where I can suddenly get excited about Doctor Who before it goes on air.
Excellent.
But I got there in the end, and I got that warm, fuzzy, tingly, nervous, excited feeling. And I watched Doctor Who for breakfast.
Fantastic.
This morning.
I was just about to say, what was your viewing experience like?
Well, I watched it on Disney Plus because I thought, hey, VPN, what's that? That's like highly illegal and only weirdos use those.
Yeah.
So I decided I'll watch it the legitimate way in New Zealand, and I watched it on iPlayer. Now, I will say, for anyone who is a scumbag who likes to skip ahead to the end of stuff before it's gone out and spoil it for everybody, I noticed that the Disney Plus version went live just as the continuity announcer was wrapping up whatever was on previously on BBC One before the Star Beast actually aired.
So I'm
thinking there's probably about a minute and a half to 2 minutes where it comes on Disney Plus first.
Oh, so they get it fraction of a second or two more. Oh, dear.
Yeah, I think so. And also, from an international standpoint, I can say the subtitles are basically identical.
Right.
I think they describe the TARDIS as wheezing.
Yeah, good. Well, that's
or whooshing or something.
Okay.
It started with the stock Disney Plus originals. Jank. Intro.
Right.
So no TARDIS-y stuff and no Hooniverse either.
Oh! Well, I guess
nothing like that.
I guess Hooniverse doesn't exist on Disney Plus, does it? At the moment, anyway.
At the moment, until the war between the land and the sea comes out.
Oh, yeah. See?
Which has just been registered as a company
in the
United
Kingdom.
He's
over my head, Mr. Sea Devil. You know, he never told me again. It was the same with Legend of the Sea Devils. He never tells me when he's getting new work.
Narcissus likes to keep it shtum.
Yeah.
You know, like how many NDAs they've had to sign over the last
that's it.
40 years. I can understand
it. I think he just feels a bit embarrassed after the last time he got work, and it was a bit of a cock up. He's probably thinking, I don't want to get anyone's hopes up.
I was thinking about that. So this is the last full-blooded episode of Doctor Who new to TV that we reviewed was The Power of the Doctor.
Yeah.
Which was last October, was it?
Wow. Yes, it was. Yeah.
It's been over a year since we have reviewed a fully fledged new episode of Doctor Who. And it's been well over, I want to say, 2 years since we heard that the Russell thing was happening.
Yeah.
And that, you know, DT and Catherine were coming back. I think I was in New Zealand when that news broke. So that was last March, maybe?
Yes. Where were you? I mean, I remember where I was. I was sat at my desk at work and I saw it pop up. And I remember texting you ferociously.
I have a texting.
Well, WhatsApp.
Oh, okay. I thought you were saying you did something else ferociously. So I think that one is Ellie not on that episode with about David and Catherine? Or is my mind playing tricks on
Yes,
that?
Ellie is on the episode where we talk about them being announced. People in the chat are saying that you're a little bit quiet, Billy. Don't know if you can...
Can I...
that's louder.
Move close... Oh, did I... have I blown your eardrums out?
No, that's better.
If
I think
that's better...
Is that better for people?
Tell me if that's all right or not. This is all newfangled and exciting.
Well, yeah, this is it. You know, we're Luddites when it comes to stuff like this.
Even though you work for a company that exclusively streams most of their content.
Yeah, I don't do that stuff. I just do the bloody editing end. I don't know this. Here we go. We've got people in the chat. Now I've got that. Yes. So here we go. Lovely to see people in the chat. Billy, can you turn up your mic a fraction? Hopefully that's done it. Let us know. Yeah, that's fine,
okay,
guys.
Cool.
Oh, thank you, Doctor
nice
in the
one.
TARDIS.
Thank you, the Doctor in the TARDIS.
So bloody early, lads, says Keith. Yeah, don't blame
it's
me.
It's bloody late, bro.
It's his fault. He buggered off to New Zealand.
Well, I'm getting Doctor Who Worlds of Wonder, and you're not.
Well,
so...
I'm seeing Nicola Bryant in a few hours, so I'm getting fish and chips.
I think I've still won.
Yeah, I think you
honest.
Probably have, really. I'm going down to Western Supermare. hardly
God's
the paradise
truth.
Of the UK, is it?
The paradise of death.
It is the paradise of death. Right then, shall we get down to it? Let's get down to business to defeat the Meep. Right, maybe Matt is too loud, Robert Dodd says.
Let me live with it.
I'm just a loud git. I'm sorry. I've got. Oh, hang on.
Is your assistant producer coming in?
Right. Off.
Oh, God, it's not him, is it?
Where am I?
You didn't need to. There you are. There you are.
Can people hear me?
Yeah, they can hear you.
Hello. Because of the universe, please attend. Like, I feel like the master this morning because I've got a collar. Billy, how are you?
Jonathan Toffolo, my mortal enemy as I live and breathe. Hello,
how are you, sir?
All right?
I'm fine, thank you. And hello, viewers and listeners and others, etc. Nice to see you all. Now, I've got to be very careful what I say because I can't be edited because it's live and Matthew's having palpitations.
Yes, you have
here.
To make sure
all
that
gonna
you
say
are
is
very...
two things. One, if you could see my kitchen this morning for this set. I mean, I've got to limbo to get in through the door, practically. It's insane. So there we go. But it looks very good. Got my good hat there on the background.
I didn't
notice.
Look.
Yes, look, it's there.
It's back.
Have a good look. Do you know about Doctor Who last night? That's more important. Anyway, I will say one little thing about Doctor Who last night before you all get started, because, you know, Matt and I think are on the same wavelength from last night's episode. And I will just leave you all with the inimitable words of Tom Baker, which is, I was very pleased.
Oh, I was worried we were going to get a return of Whippet Shit for a second there. Thank you very much, Johnny.
You thought you were going to say it was Whippet Shit? No. With an intro like that, let's just dive into it, I guess.
I think we should. Do you want to work through it chronologically, or should we just splat things out there?
I mean, I didn't take any notes while we watched it because I was just too engrossed in the programme.
And you've only watched it once.
I've only watched it once, but we did go back and we rewatched select scenes that we enjoyed or bits that we weren't 100% sure on, just to get some clarification. And then I took some notes and I sort of, as we were watching bits, I was like, oh yeah, I remember this happening. And I just jotted them down. So what about you? Have you only watched it once as well?
No, I've watched it twice.
Wow.
I watched it twice, once this morning when it first went out.
Right.
With a bowl of cereal, and then again this afternoon when we came back from running some errands and doing some stuff around the house.
Okay.
And I've also watched Unleashed and the behind the scenes on the YouTube channel.
We just watched that over breakfast.
I was just going to say, that needs to be promoted more, because I think at a glance, you think, oh, it's just stuff recycled from Unleashed, but it's all new stuff, and it's really, really interesting.
Yeah.
So definitely worth checking out.
I got to say, they have gone balls out with all the behind-the-scenes material. The fact that you've got the Bespoke program on BBC Three, you've got, like you just said, that on YouTube, you've got the InVision commentary as well, and then of course there's another podcast. I know we shouldn't really be promoting other podcasts because but they're talking about Doctor Who on the official Doctor Who YouTube channel, so if you want to hear their side of
get
the story,
get it right up your man. No, I mean, actually, it's going to be brilliant because the people working on it are fantastic, so you should all go and listen to that. But you won't get knob and bum jokes over there, folks, is
that,
all I'm
that
saying.
That is true. That is true. And you won't get Jonathan going on about my hats in the corner. That's the most important thing. And they haven't got a good set like this either. They haven't got all these good bits and bobs in there. It's just...
Although, can you imagine, there is definitely a pitch meeting, and definitely we were brought up in it. Absolutely. When they were talking about it, I'm sure they went, oh, well, what do these podcasts look like? How do they put it out? I'm sure that we popped up on a screen and Russell has seen the set, at least.
I think they probably said, how not to do a Doctor Who podcast. Don't be like these two buggers.
Stop talking about it anyway. We're derailing them. Everyone's saying, go and listen to the competition.
Lots of people are saying, Johnny, hello, Jonathan. That's good. Oh, someone put, the Doctor in the TARDIS put, any new screen-used costume parts? Unfortunately, no. Jonathan hasn't got any new screen-used costume parts. But I mean, Sylvester McCoy did hold his umbrella. So, you know, it's not screen-used, but, you know, it was touched by the man off the screen. Anyhow, let's get down to it. The Star Beast. Right then. It was bloody good, wasn't it?
It was flipping marvellous. It was just... I don't really know how to describe it, to be honest, because I'm sure... Hey, oh, fuck. Do you know what? I was watching it and I thought, in my head, I'm ranking it. I'm giving it a number, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I hate thinking about TV like that these days.
Yeah.
Because what does it mean? It's arbitrary. You know, one person's 5 is another person's 10 and whatever.
Yeah.
And I was sat there and I was thinking, if this was any other time, if this wasn't the 60th anniversary, if it wasn't the return of Russell, if it wasn't the return of DT and Catherine Tate, Murray Gold, Danny Hargreaves, you know, all the old crew, you know, it's a solid start to a season, right? Yeah. But it's not that. It's the start of a 3-part special where the whole gang is back together. And I was just so in love with everyone's craft and everyone's hard work. And I loved what Jodie Whittaker and Chris Chibnall did with the show. I was a really big fan of that whole tenure. But this hits different, doesn't it?
This is it. I mean, we all sort of said it came out of the gate with such a confidence. You know, it had a swagger from the off. And it was just like, it had this weird confidence that I don't want to say that, you know, the previous era didn't have, but like you said, it just felt very different. Yeah, I don't know. It's weird, but you know, the title sequence. Obviously, we had the pre-title sequence, which was David and Catherine.
Yeah, what did you think of that?
I didn't mind it because for the people listening, you know, if you listen to our last episode, I actually cut out the bit where you talked about that because I thought people might get a bit upset that's a bit of a spoiler. So Billy actually told me last time that happened from one of the reviews, and I remember thinking, well, we'll see how that is. And I kind of assumed that it was going to be partway through the episode. They were going to be like, oh, right. So just to keep you all up to date, this is what's going on. And I was like, oh, dear, that's going to be a bit cringe. But the fact that they did it as like the pre-titles, it was quite doom-laden. I think my main criticism, and it isn't a criticism really, but my concern is, was this story a bit too continuity heavy for anybody new coming in? Because it felt like there was a lot of an info dump going on. I mean, I know that Shooty is obviously Shooty is obviously like the proper launch, you know, for like the new era. This is kind of like our little bonus present for the anniversary and like the sort of soft reboot, I guess, if you want to call it that. But yeah, I did wonder, I was like, God, some people must be completely lost, but I don't know.
I think that on that, actually, I was speaking to Stella, my other half, about, not that she needs an introduction to you, but you know, to anyone
who's
listening
that,
and watching who doesn't know, I have a girlfriend, unbelievably. She was saying she's very confused by the whole, you know, Shooty has been announced after David was announced, but it's really going to lead to Shooty. And she finds that whole thing a bit confusing. And
right.
then, so she was like, so who's in these specials then? And I said, well, it's David and... But I thought Shooty Gat was the new Doctor. I was like, no. So it's David first, and then it leads to Shooty. But David's played the Doctor before. It's the same face, but it's a different incarnation. And they're going to have to try and figure out why it's the same face.
Did you get the flowchart out, Billy?
Yeah. I think in all honesty, that is probably the most confusing part for Notwheeze.
Yeah.
I think that... the majority of the people tuning in either are like, oh, it's Doctor Who, you know, Technobabble, I'll just sort of go with it.
Right.
Or they watched it during that golden era and they know Metacrisis, Dr. Donna, and this is just like a Cliff Notes version of that story.
Just
And, you know, the fact that the whole thing has been remastered and is now available on iPlayer means that it is not impossible. And the number of clips they've put on YouTube catching people up with the whole Dr. Donna thing on the official Doctor Who YouTube channel, I think that just means that people already have a basic understanding of what's going on. And watching it a second time, I wasn't quite as sort of thrown out of what was going on by that intro.
Okay.
I think it works better the second time, for me anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was fine. You know, I didn't think it was an issue. I thought that was a clever way of doing it without having to, like, do a recap from old clips. Because I guess if you do something like that, maybe you run the risk of people tuning in and going, oh, well, I've not seen this. What, have I missed an episode?
Yeah, and going, like, if you have previously on Doctor Who, and it's like, oh, God, like, this is... And that's the classic thing that made people tune out during the Moffat era, is, oh, I didn't watch last week, so I don't know where we're at in the narrative with the Pandorica and blah, blah, blah.
Yep.
And the eye patch lady. So, it was very well... it was very well pitched
for a
quick intro.
I saw some... great things on Twitter where people said that shot of David against, you know, that starry backdrop at the beginning looked like, because he was to one side, they said it looked like a character creation screen.
I saw that.
That was so good. I don't know who it was, but well done. The title sequence and the new music. What do you think about that?
Firstly, can I just say Murray Gold, I think this is probably... one of the best scores of the whole episode is for that previously on Doctor Who segment, because we may not be able to have the ooey-oos, but what we do have as a motif through this episode is da-da-da-da, which was like, oh, I'm liking this.
I thought I'd noticed da-da-da-das, and I was like, no, I must be going mad. I'm mishearing it. Oh, but you heard it too.
It definitely happens in the intro, and it definitely happens when, I'm sure, when Donna tells... her clan to sort of like get out of the steel mill. I'm fairly certain it happens then. But anyway,
I agree. I thought Murray's score for this was... I actually thought it was quite understated, really, compared to some of his other stuff. But I thought it was very good. I thought it was excellent. You know, it kept the energy up. And there were like nice moments where there was no underscore at all. Which seemed quite unusual because, you know, I kind of remember the RTD years before just sort of being music constantly. But this felt like, I don't know, this in some ways, it felt like Series 4 had grown up.
I know what you mean. And I think that actually rings true in David's performance as well.
Because he was superb.
I don't get this whole thing where he's saying... well, it'd be a bit weird if I came back and I was doing it differently. You know, it's like, But you are actually doing it differently.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I can see in your performance, either you've matured as a performer and you're doing what you would do now if you got the role again fresh,
yeah.
but it was the same character on paper. But he's also not, you know, I think we got
Can I just say that was an extremely good David Tennant impression.
Do you want to hear my Dr. Hibbert as well? I thought that he was really, really... really nailed on with the part.
Oh, he was fantastic.
I thought he was, I don't know. It's like all the best parts of his 10th Doctor performances over the years in one, like all the weightiness and all the, actually, you know, actually listen to me. It wasn't shrouded in, oh, you know, Alonzi. It wasn't all of that.
Yeah.
There was a couple of those in there just as like almost little references.
Yeah.
But this Doctor actually seems decidedly more mature.
Yeah.
To me.
I think weirdly, perhaps the 14th Doctor is going to go up in my rankings compared to the 10th Doctor. It's going to be weird.
I think that's totally normal because it's a different incarnation. I think that we need to make that distinction. Also, because I'm sure we'll talk about David a bit later on, but while we were talking about Murray, when the Doctor's theme played when the TARDIS materialized in Camden.
Yeah.
Again, it was like one of those, oh my God, kind of spine tingling. And then also kind of realizing, but this is my era of Doctor Who.
Like, yeah. I mean,
for new episodes, you know?
We were sat there and like Annie sort of heard that music. And obviously that was how she first got into Doctor Who, was watching David Tennant. So she had that very same reaction. She got all excited when she heard it. And it was nice being able to watch it with her, because obviously this was her era, really, in a way. This is what got her into Doctor Who. Speaking of the music and different cues, did you notice the cue that played when the Doctor Donna got her Doctor memories back?
I think that might be an indication that a certain Matthew Smythe is not returning in these specials, because it didn't relieve itself. That's a terrible way of putting it. It didn't sort of like peak and like bash straight into the refrain.
Yeah.
But the I Am the Doctor theme was very present during that whole sequence. I only realised that on a second viewing.
When we were watching it, I was like, that sounds like I Am the Doctor. And I was like, well, yeah. She is the Doctor at this moment, so that makes sense. I mean, you know, people at home wouldn't notice that, but for the fans who know the names of all the track listings, you know, that was a fun little Easter egg, and it worked.
Yeah.
The title sequence then. Seeing as we veered off into Murray Gold territory. I like the new theme, by the way. The new theme has grown on me, because I know when it played at the concert, I was like, oh, this sounds like, you know, a lot of bloody bin lids being smashed together, and you've just like layered lots of different themes on top of each other, and it just like a cacophony of a bit of a mess. But I gotta say, I'm really enjoying it with the visuals and the fact that it's the studio mix, so everything is in time. And I still don't like that little bit at the beginning. That new bit that they've added.
Yeah.
Because I am obviously...
Yeah.
But on the whole, I really do like the new theme.
I really like the new theme as well. On the mix, though...
Right.
I don't know if this is a Disney Plus thing, but all over the end credits, you can hear people going...
yeah! This is so weird! We were watching it, we're like, what the fuck's that?
But I went back and then listened to the opening theme with headphones on, and it's there, but it's really quiet in the mix. So I think they fucked the mix up for the closing titles.
Yeah,
because I heard it through the soundbar and the subwoofer, and I was like, that sounds really weird. What is that, a reference to something? And then I had my headphones on and thought, this isn't foreshadowing something fucking weird and toy makery or whatever. But it's in the opening. It's just, I think it's the end credit theme has been mixed really badly.
Oh, well, I hope they sort that out for like next week or you know, the inevitable soundtrack release. But yeah, that was very strange. It is voices, is it?
it's people's voices going, it's like, they used to do that on Beatle albums to sort of fluff up the textures of things. But it's not orchestral. It
sounds like they're just doing
groaning.
A bit of fluffing on that.
Well, there you go. What's going on underneath that conductor podium, Murray? Yeah. You'll never know. So yeah, I love the theme. I've got the piano bit.
Yeah,
in
I like
my
the
head.
Piano bit. The piano bit hit better in the proper mix.
Definitely.
Yeah.
On to the titles though, because we've been putting off talking about this. So I agree with what a lot of people have been saying on Twitter. I don't think this is the full title sequence. I think this is a slightly cut down version, because even the theme gets slightly snipped at the end.
Yeah.
And I also wonder if that plays into PNG Gate with the logo appearing in the way it does.
Right.
Because I think we will see the full debut of this title sequence when Shooty starts. Because I think this is Shooty's title sequence too.
Yeah, I can't imagine them doing another one.
So,
I know what you mean about that cut off. it comes in very quick and quite abrupt, and I was a bit like, oh, okay. But I think for the actual sequence itself, I loved it. I mean, we said it was kind of like the McCoy titles on acid, because it was really that journey through space. You know, you're really following the TARDIS going around. You know, I mean, obviously, I know with the 2005. Well, onwards, you know, you see the TARDIS, you know, bumping around the vortex, which is fantastic. But it was just this one, you know, you actually felt like the camera was attached to the TARDIS almost at points, where it really closed in. And then you got those lovely shots of it, like farther away, going through the clouds.
I was going to ask, is this the first time that we've seen a cut to like a different angle in a title sequence? It must be. I can't think of another instance, because there's... So it opens, it spins, it kind of skirts around the edge of the vortex. Then you get that cut to the front of it, and it's sort of spinning away. And then you get at least five or six cuts in there, because I loved that crash zoom into it, sort of trying to follow it going from one vortex to another, which is a really nice reference to the original 2005 title sequence, I thought, but kind of, you know, mega updated.
Yeah. And almost a bit like the Whittaker vortex, where, you know, there's those like little pockets into different time zones or whatever. I don't know.
Exactly. But yeah, I don't think that we're going to see another title sequence for a while. I think this is it. But I do think that it's going to be slightly extended. I have a feeling that from the point where David and Catherine's names appear.
Yeah.
There's maybe a bit before that we don't see.
Yeah. Should you get with the face? Well, possibly,
you know. But I thought it was terrific. I really, really liked it. And I loved the theme tune. I thought the two married beautifully.
Yeah. I think that's it, isn't it? When you see it with the visuals, that really just elevates it. So the story itself then, what do we think? I cocked up. I was supposed to bring my copy of The Star Beast, because I reread The Star Beast a couple of weeks ago in preparation.
I was just about to ask about that, because I haven't ever read it. So I want you to tell me from your perspective, having read it, what you thought of it, maybe as an adaptation initially. Because, I mean, that is the first thing you notice in the title sequence is adapted from a story.
Yeah, I mean, as someone who's, you know, been a big comic book fan most of his life, and, you know, go to see all these like Marvel and DC films and watch it and go, oh, well, they didn't do that in the comic books. It was funny to sort of see it with Doctor Who, because obviously Doctor Who never adapts anything, you know, it's always bespoke stories. So it was interesting. Now, I don't know the Star Beast that well, which is why I reread it to have a refresher course. And I loved it. It's so good. It's a great little story. And I think as an adaptation, they did very well sticking to a lot of the core beats of the story. Mm. There are a few things that happened in the comic book that didn't happen in Last Night. So in the comic book, Tom Baker gets captured by the Roth Warriors, and they implant a bomb in his stomach. They surgically implant a bomb in his stomach.
Oh, God.
And they let him go off, and they're going to like detonate it to kill the Meep. Which obviously did not happen in last night's story. When I was reading it, I was like, I can't see them starting off with this. People are going to be like, what the hell? It's like they've turned the Doctor into like some sort of kamikaze warrior. What the hell?
Yeah, so I can see why they didn't go with that. But, you know, all the mind control stuff, you know, that Meep controls the minds of all the unit soldiers, you know, all that stuff happens in a slightly different way, but, you know, it's that same thing. So, yeah, I mean, they did a really good job of adapting it, I think, and obviously incorporating all the new stuff that needed to be put into it with Donna and her family. So, yeah, worth a read. If you can reread it,
I will definitely
give it a go. Yeah.
Yeah, so I loved last night's story. I mean, we've already made a song and dance over it in terms of the story itself. I think it kind of did that classic Doctor Who thing, and I've seen a lot of people, we'll see what people thought of it on Twitter in a minute.
But, yeah.
I saw a lot of people saying, oh, it just resolves itself within 5 minutes at the end. And it's like, if you're not expecting that from Doctor Who, I don't know what to tell you, because that is sort of Doctor Who storytelling 101 for the most part in the 21st century, because you don't have 4 to 6 weeks to spread this story out. You know, you've got an hour, and ideally you should be able to, you know, three-part structure it perfectly within that. But then again, this is sort of setting the pace for the show as a whole. There it is.
My producer just came in.
Thank you, producer. Did you see on Doctor Who, I think it was the behind the scenes on the YouTube channel, somebody getting their copy of that signed?
Yes, yeah, really good. I mean, that was lovely. I mean, that whole bit on Doctor Who Unleashed where David Tennant met Dave Gibbons and Pat Mills, you know, that was so lovely, because you could see that boyish fan enthusiasm that we all have when we meet someone at a convention or, you know, doing whatever, you know, that excitement of seeing somebody. It was lovely. It was like, oh, he is such a fan deep down. It just made me think again about that talking Doctor Who that he did. I was like, I wish we'd have got to see more of him being able to react like this, rather than just sort of give us like a plotted history through the BBC archive. It would have been so nice to sort of just
I remember this.
Yeah. I was sat with mum and dad and, you know, whatever, or we had beans on toast, or, you know, all that kind of stuff that, you know, that we can really relate to. Sorry, where were you
In the proceedings? I can't remember, but I thought it was fabulous.
You're talking about the ending.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, exactly. I don't know what we're expecting. Like, it's you know, it's setting the pace for the next two episodes. It's setting the pace for all three. If it resolves itself within the last 5 minutes, it's fine, because I feel like that momentum just swings into part two anyway.
Yeah.
It's a bit different if we were, I don't know, I can't think of many instances where I'd be too aggrieved by it these days that sort of happened.
I mean, we kind of expected it too, you know, that the sort of quick resolution. Yeah. I did have a couple of issues with the resolution, just because there were things that I wasn't 100% sure or clear on, which I don't know if we want to talk about a bit later on.
We can get into it now. I think if you've got it, on your mind, then just say it, because we'll lose our place otherwise.
But I can understand what people said, because I think one of the things that I thought was a bit like, well, that seems a bit of a cop out, was obviously the engine, the dagger engine or whatever it was called, you know, digs into the ground, and you get this fantastic special effects sequence of, you know, the streets of London erupting with lava and stuff that we'd seen in the trailer, and we were all like, ooh, I wonder what that is. But then when they undo it, it's like they literally undo it and the tarmac just goes and back into place. I was like, oh, come on, at least leave the cracks in the road. Come on, get London Council to, you know, come in and sort it out, or get UNIT in, tarmac in the roads.
It would have been quite neat, actually, because, you know, we're going to come back to present day London later in this run. If, you know, you just got a quick reference to them still just finishing up the potholes, you know, whatever, or tarmacking people's drives. I can see why that. But then, you know, also at the same time, this is a comic book adaptation of a science fantasy TV series. So I'm sort of like, whatever, you know, it's fine.
But the thing that I found the resolution, I mean, I had to watch it twice because I was a bit like, wait, so what exactly happened? So obviously Donna gets her Dr. Metacrisis memories back in order to help stop the ship from
She has a technobabble seizure, I think. Yeah, she, down.
Very good. And I got slightly confused with how they sort of portrayed the, you know, the binary, non-binary stuff. That sort of felt... It felt a bit clunky. Do you know what I mean?
I agree with you. I think...
And I think a lot of people have said this. I mean, I think... I want to preface this by saying I think it's wonderful that we've got, you know, trans representation and, you know, as a lead character, as a character who's so important to the story. And, you know, I think just having that moment of the Doctor saying, oh, you know, the Metacrisis was too much for one being to handle, but you had a daughter and therefore it was spread across the two of you. I think that was a perfect enough explanation. And I was like, oh, okay. And then when they started doing, oh, binary, non-binary, and, you know, the Doctor's not male or female or this or that, I was like, well, I'm starting to get a, you're losing me now because I don't really know
I
what
think
any
that
of this
was
means.
Like a separate point that was being made, but to have it so close to the resolution sort of muddied it a little bit.
Yeah.
Obviously, a massive part of this story is identity.
Yes.
And, you know, Rose at the end of it finally being freed of like the half Time Lord part of her and saying, you know, she finally feels like her was like a nice resolution and sort of like, you know, as part of that. And also, as you were talking about sort of trans representation, having Rose dead named by those lads on the bike.
Yeah.
I think Russell said on Unleashed, didn't he say something like, those boys are watching this at home tonight and thinking, maybe I shouldn't do that.
Yeah.
And it's like that, you know, it's essential for those reasons that we get this sort of stuff.
This is it, because I saw a few people on Twitter, and I think a few trans people on Twitter were sort of saying, oh, you know, they shouldn't have done that. They shouldn't have done the dead name. But I agree. I think it is important because I think, you know, it's such a horrible scene that it, you know, you feel that empathy with Rose's character and with Donna. And, you know, like Russell said, you know, this happens, you know, Yasmin Finney said, you know, her school experience was not a good one. So I think it is important that, you know, you show the horrible side of things, to get people to empathize. So I
like the reality of it, you know,
exactly.
Like the people who are saying, oh, you know, trans people acting like they have it tough and whatever. It's like, they don't see that happening to people on the street daily, which is the lived experience of trans people, that they get that.
Exactly.
You know, it's like, it's important that it's shown in the program.
Yeah, and very brave of them to put it in there. And I loved the fact that they had that little moment in the kitchen, Donna and Sylvia, where they discussed it. And, you know, Sylvia was like, oh, you know, I get all muddled and, you know, it's difficult. And, you know, Donna was like, well, yeah, so do I. But, you know, it was done in such a nice way and in such a realistic way. And I think this is why the ending sort of made me wince a little bit, because I think that was done so well and it was done so realistically and so human. And then all of a sudden you've got like, oh, we need to incorporate that into the sci-fi element. And I sort of thought like, I don't think you really need it there.
I don't think it was even that deep of like incorporating it into the sci-fi element. I just think it was a clunky bit of dialogue.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, it's like, not that you can't make that point anymore.
No.
But I think when, you know, you're having that resolution to then have that in there as part of it, as if it's part of the sci-fi narrative of it, like you say, actually.
Yeah.
It's like... But then how do you know, Doctor Who fans' brains work in that way where it's like, right, so let's write that down. What does that mean?
Yeah.
You know, and it's like,
is it like a casual audience member just go over their heads? But you know, for Doctor Who fans, we like to really compartmentalize and try and understand the logic of how these things work, because we're all mad. So that was why we were all three of us were sat there like, what? And we're like, we must rewind this back later on and listen to it properly.
But then actually afterwards, that whole thing about, you know, the Doctor is both man and woman and neither and more and all that sort of stuff.
That was good.
That was really lovely. And that was sort of separate to that resolution.
Yeah.
and it felt like that was just another sort of flag in the ground, like,
yeah.
With Russell when he came to do the Rose novelization and had descriptions of all the different types of timeless doctors in there. It's just sort of another example of that being at the forefront of his view of the program. And obviously, visually, the program as well, with certain set design choices that have been made with a certain new debuting set, the accessibility and diversity is totally at the forefront of this era of the program. Which is really, really exciting.
We've got UNIT's new scientific advisor, Shirley.
And Shirley.
Yeah, I mean, who was great.
Who had, I think, had the best line of dialogue about, you've got weapons in your wheelchair. We all do.
Yeah.
I thought it was just magic.
Yeah.
I love that.
I put in my notes, I was like, she's, her wheelchair, you know, Q Branch would have been very, very proud of that one with the rocket launchers and stuff.
Yeah,
I was like, oh, I can see Desmond Llewellyn coming out and saying, "Now then, 007, look at this." she was great. She was really great, and I look forward to seeing more of her and more of UNIT. We'll talk about UNIT in a minute. The only thing I wanted to just say about that end scene, and I think is right what you said, that it was trying to make a lot of points, but they were all in close succession, so it all felt clumped into the finale a bit too much. I wasn't so sure about the gag about, oh, this is something a male-presenting Time Lord wouldn't understand. And I think a lot of people on Twitter seem to react the same way. It was like, what?
Correct me if I'm wrong, chat, and there's something in the chat I want to read out in a second, but
cool.
I think that was basically another way of saying blokes' brains don't work like that, or like men wouldn't understand.
Yeah.
Like, I think, you know, because you get those jokes in the Moffat era and you get those jokes in the RTD era. I think this is just with the sort of lingo that we would use now, male presenting. I think it was just, but as Jam Jam has said in the chat here, as a trans person, I did feel the same way, but how do you do it in a way that doesn't feel clunky? It's unfamiliar to society, so I think it's always going to be clunky.
Yeah.
And I think that's absolutely, absolutely bang on that. These are all, it's not just in terms of Doctor Who, but I think in terms of most mainstream media that people are consuming, who wouldn't have come across terms like male presenting.
No.
And even non-binary. I mean, that's, you know, old hat to us and a lot of people. For a lot of people, it isn't. So I think I can understand totally where you're coming from, Jam Jam.
Yeah.
I think our sort of comment on it is more the proximity to the technobabble.
Yes.
And that there wasn't a sort of transition from one to the other, you know.
Has it been a bit of a pause, just like a bit of a break scene, because it just sort of felt like all of these ideas were just sort of being clumped into one. But I mean, like you said, you know, it needed to wrap up the story. And I don't think that, you know, the resolution was bad in any way. I just thought, you know, it was just a, maybe not clumsy, but there was just a bit clunky, like we said. Should we talk about UNIT, seeing as we were just sort of discussing UNIT?
Yeah.
UNIT have a really big presence in this story. Not quite so sure on this, like, big macho, like, RoboCop-esque armor that they're now wearing. But obviously a very different UNIT than the UNIT we had in the Chibnall era, where there basically was no UNIT for most of it. But it seems like everybody knows. It seems like the secret's out there.
Yeah.
UNIT is now an organisation that people are aware of.
I mean, they've got a fucking massive skyscraper in the middle of
Central
London.
They've got Avengers Tower in London. So, yeah. So that was really interesting. And the way that they weaved it into other elements of the story of, like, oh, Kate Stewart has supplied Wilf with the accommodation and all this kind
of
stuff.
He's a Chelsea pensioner.
Yeah. Kate Stewart, if you're watching, I take back everything that I've said about you, but my grandma needs some assisted living at the moment. So, you know, if you want to give her a room next to Wilf, that'd
help
be good.
Her out.
So I find that very interesting. And especially at the beginning, when you have the news reporter trying to give his report about what is happening at the Steelworks, and they pick him up and they, like, bundle him into the back of the van.
Mm.
So I wonder if there's going to be
Is there going to be more of a sinister edge to
I wondered that as well, because when Shirley goes up to the Doctor in the Steelworks and she goes, oh, you're on our side, and he sort of looks at them and goes, no, I don't know. I wonder if, there is something that's sort of going to
emerge. Yeah, something skewed, isn't it? Yeah.
Exactly. You know, because they can't be that big and have, you know, be throwing their weight around like that and there not be teething issues with the way that they're behaving and blah, blah, blah. And I'm sure the Doctor's going to have a lot to say about that.
Yeah.
I liked UNIT's presence. You know, it was still nice that they might have, you know, massive assault rifles and they might be Robocopped up, but they're still turning up in fucking 1970s Land Rover Defenders, which I thought was really lovely. I am interested to see how the UNIT stuff develops. I'm interested to see where it's going to go.
Yeah, it seems like it's going to be a big part of the new era. You know, we've already seen that Mel is going to be involved in some way. We know Kate Stewart's back in several stories.
Are we going to see anybody else in Wilf's nursing home, do you think?
Well, who knows? Maybe. Is that what it is? Is that where all Doctor Who companions go?
Yeah. You know, just, you know, there'll be a shot of, you know, crabbing along the corridor. David's going towards Wilf's room.
Yeah.
And, you know, you see, I don't know, Bilal helping himself to a bedpan or something, tipping it out the window. You know, we'll see something like that, I'm sure. Yeah. It'll be lovely to catch up with some of the old biddies.
So that I loved all that. I thought that was great. And I think, obviously, the Wilf situation, if we just go to him a moment, that was handled really well, because I think we all expected him to be in this episode, but obviously he wasn't, because we did see him filming some stuff in Camden, so maybe that's for episode 3?
He was at the read-through, wasn't he? But I think that read-through is for
all three episodes, yeah.
I suspected that was the case, but if stuff's been shot in Camden, it'd be interesting if that pops up in episode 3, because we know the stuff that was shot in Bristol with Bernard was also supposed to be set in Camden.
Right, okay, yeah.
So I guess that makes sense that, episode 3 that we'll finally catch up with Wilf and see what's going on. But I also loved that he played into the ending with them deciding to go off and have a little trip. And we're going to go and see Gramps. And, you know, that is such a classic. Oh, well, we'll only be gone like 5 minutes or whatever. Yeah. And then the next thing you know, the Doctor's turning up at their doorstep with Donna and his arms blown to bits.
Yeah.
You know, it just feels like, I know that Russell has been quite heavy on Instagram, sort of leading us into thinking Donna is done for.
Yeah.
But now we've got the meta crisis thing out of the way.
Yeah.
And that does seem to be resolved, right? Because the Doctor says the meta crisis is still happening, but it's now just happening more slowly because it's split between the two of you. But then when Donna and Rose hold hands and they sort of expel all that regeneration energy, is that it done?
I guess so. I think that was the other thing that was like, that seemed very easy, you know, after they made such a big deal of it for so many years that all it took was
I liked
a
the
bit
explanation
of a
about it being transferred to,
to so
the
did
daughter,
I.
though. Like that was nice. But I agree, like it did seem kind of classic. We'll put some VFX over this and that'll explain what's happened.
Yeah.
You know.
And I also like with Wilf, going back to Wilf, just the way that they played it, that you thought, oh, you know, Wilf's died, but obviously he hadn't. Yeah. And I think David, I mean, I'm going to be praising David a lot for so much of his emotional acting, but, you know, there were so many times in this story where, you know, even me with my stone cold heart got choked up, you know, like when David was sort of saying about, oh, I loved that man. And I was like, you know, because, you know, you just protect Wilf at all costs because he's so, so lovely. That was very good. And I mean, that whole sequence towards the end where, you know, he thought Donna sort of had it. Yeah, he was so good. He was brilliant. And Catherine Tate as well. We should talk about Catherine Tate. She was amazing. I mean, it was just like it was like no time had passed between now and 2009.
I agree. But there was, I think, between the two of them, and we spoke about David a little bit earlier, a level of maturity I think they've gone up in their performances, because these two characters are older, they're wiser, they've had more lived experiences. I think their lived experiences as real people has come into this.
Yeah.
I think Donna as a mum, I was sort of like, oh, I don't know, let's see how they kind of carry this off as for her character.
Yeah.
But just was effortless and faultless and just worked really beautifully. And how much of a, I think Russell said how much of a lioness she is for Rose.
Yeah.
Was great.
Yeah.
And I think Donna had probably my favorite lines in the whole thing. Like, you know, there's a bloody Martian in the shed.
Oh, brilliant.
Get off me, you space rat.
Yeah.
Mad Paddington.
Yes,
you know,
Mad
all
Paddington.
That stuff
yeah.
was just beautiful.
Very good. Yeah.
And she hit all those marks. And I don't know if I go back to series four now, if I view her slightly differently, because Donna was never sort of a character I held up particularly highly.
Yeah, both of us sort of we'd said that before, hadn't we?
And now I think you know I love Donna because Catherine was so good in this.
Yeah,
and I want to see more of them. And I don't know if we want to talk about it now or if we want to talk about it at the end. But people were talking a lot on Twitter about foreshadowing.
Right.
In reference to a leak that came out not long ago. Now, I don't know the full extent of the leak because I skim read it. I don't really understand it.
Right.
But I think... Oh, I'll probably have to leave it there. But...
We'll talk about that afterwards. We'll talk about that privately. So it's not to spoil it for people in case... I think I know the Twitter post that you're talking about. I don't think that it's necessarily... accurate, but I don't know.
No.
I'm not sure for sure. But we'll park that just in case we don't want to spoil it for people. But yeah, I mean, they were really good. I thought the husband, I forget his name, he was great as well. I mean, Sylvia was brilliant, and I loved how her character Sean. That's it. Well done. He was really great. That was a great moment when he walks in to see this tableau of chaos of, you know, the Doctor, Meep, and everything going on. And then he's like, oh, that something smells nice, you know. He's just like, I can't deal with this. I'll just focus on what's for dinner. That was
it's
great.
It's so nice to have a family dynamic back in Doctor Who.
Yeah, and
know?
Done so well.
And
because
it doesn't
Russell does
feel
his-
like kitchen sink in the same way the Tylers did. It feels a bit more, it feels a bit warmer.
Yeah.
You know, and it feels, I mean, I think aesthetically it just sort of looks warmer anyway. And it, you know, it's using a slightly warmer kind of color palette.
Yeah.
But it was definitely nice to have like a full family unit hanging out. A great comment just popped up here. Is Tuna Madras really a thing?
Yeah.
I was talking about this to Stel all day.
Yeah.
I'm going to get us on a Tuna Madras in the week.
Okay.
If not, the week after, and I will let you know by the end of these specials if a Tuna Madras is any good.
So it's interesting you should say that, because in Doctor Who magazine, when I think Benjamin Cook was on set while they were filming that, they actually were cooking Tuna Madras. Because of their now humongous budget, they didn't need to fake it. They were just like, yeah, let's just make Tuna Madras. And everyone was saying, it's like, well, this smells nice. And Hellsworth has just put it in the chat. Rusty Davies said it was a family dish of his, but he may have made it up. He's not 100% sure. So yeah,
what they were listening to while they were cooking their Tuna Madras?
What were they listening to, Billy?
They were listening to, if I can find it on my notes, A Deeper Shade of Blue by Steps.
Okay.
So, you know... kind of a Doctor Who-y reference.
Kind
like
of a Doctor
Russell's
Who-y.
Going through his playlist and going blue, 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 blue. Oh, Steps, there you go. At least it wasn't blue, double D, double die. That would be a bit odd.
Yeah.
Or
Doctor,
can I talk
Doctor.
About something? Or Doctor, Doctor, or Doctor in Distress. Can I talk about something I fucking hated in this episode?
Yes, go on.
That fucking sonic screwdriver can do fucking anything these days.
I gotta say... I really liked the shields.
Because okay. I was going to mention it when you talked about UNIT and the fact that they're all sort of like, you know, Robocopped up.
Yeah.
And then the use of the Sonic.
Yeah.
And even like Shirley's tablet.
Yeah.
It's like Doctor Who has gone for... Actually, and then you look back and you think about the last couple of years, there hasn't been a lot of sort of... gadgety, techno-advanced sort of stuff. Like, in the 70s, Doctor Who was always supposed to be placed, what, like 5-6 years ahead of whenever it went out.
Yeah.
And they would take the doors off of a couple of Citroen 500s and put a little motorized across, you know, to act like it was electric. But actually, I think Doctor Who is kind of stalled
yes.
in that department. And so, I think this is just the death knell for the Sonic as anything other than what I want it to be, which is just open fucking doors with it. And if you have to resonate concrete, then go for it.
Okay.
But I just thought it just sort of wound me up the first time I saw it. Second time it wasn't so bad because I was ready for it. And I thought, this is going to sell like hotcakes for kids.
Yeah.
A Sonic screwdriver that can do that. Like, how many great toys and action figure sets can you make where, you know, it's the Doctor with the shields and, you know, all that kind of stuff.
I'm getting like images of like old Batman figures where they'd like put him in ridiculous colors and it'd be like, Attack Shield Batman. He's going to be like, Attack Shield 14th Doctor. And he's in like neon green, but with a shield.
I can see it. I can also see, Russell, great idea putting him in that, what was it, the judge's wig.
Yes,
because that is a fucking Character Online exclusive if I've ever seen one.
It is, yeah. There we go, Alf. So, I mean, yeah, that was great. Nice little Stones of Blood reference. We all went, hey, Tom. Hey. So that was great. I know. I'm seeing a few people in here have sort of said, you know, I can't believe Matt liked that with the Sonic. I just thought it was really cool. And what I loved was that all the noises were the noises on the toy. And
on
I was
the toy. Like, now, that's really neat.
I was like, wow, they really did a good job of that cohesion between the licensee and the, you know, the toy manufacturer.
I will also say, it's because Russell's back. You know, it's just like everything's just seamless and works.
Where's my Beat the Meat plushie? That's what I want to know.
It will come. You know, text Al now and see what he says.
Yeah.
And we'll report back by the end of the episode. I also want to say with the Sonic and the resonating concrete bit, I don't want anyone telling me that the fucking Chibnall era is the only era with shit ADR because I can resonate concrete. And then he starts doing it. And then Sean's line ADR'd, well, it's mortar, because I'm sure that they look back at it and went, technically that's mortar and people are going to get pissed off about that. All right, Bob the Builder.
Yeah.
And they put that in. It was chiseled in there with a bloody sledgehammer. So I don't want anyone telling me that the Whitaker era is the only era that this shit ADR.
Talking about, you know, resonating mortar, a couple of plot points I want to just briefly gloss over before we get into talking about the star of the episode, which was, of course, the Meep. So Donna gets all this money, right? And so, like, you know, well, we're going to give it all away, but we're going to, you know, we'll buy a house, but we'll give the rest of it away. They had all that money and they couldn't buy a detached house. Come on.
was it not that they bought the house that they were living in at the time?
Oh, was it?
Because I think Sean was like, we bought the house rather than buying a house.
Oh, so I see.
But can't afford to run it. I think it was the house they may have been renting or maybe been paying off the mortgage on or something.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. That makes more sense. But I mean, if they're having that much trouble, sell the bloody house. Come on.
Well, there's that as well. And also, Donna, get a fucking job, bro. Come on, like, start temping back in Chiswick. Like, you know.
Yeah, but she keeps getting the sack. I think that was one of the plot points, was that she just got the sack again.
She just got the sack from that job, yeah.
Yeah. So that was that. So let's move on to the star of the episode, which was the Meep. No longer Beep the Meep. Which I thought was interesting. I wonder
I am the beep of the... there is definitely a beep reference
in there. Is there a beep
there.
In there? I am
the beep of the Meeps. Something like that. I am the most beep of the Meeps. There was some line of dialogue like that. I mean, we all knew that the heel turn was coming. And when it did, you know, let's... Miriam Margolyes was obviously fantastic.
Yeah,
phenomenal. And it was obvious. I can't think of anyone else who could have done it. Young Codger has said, no, Beep says, I am the beep of all the Meeps
when the beep
they
of
go
all
up
the
in the rocket. I thought that, you know, who else is ever going to play that part again? Just perfect. And I want Beep back. I want Beep in Torchwood fucking eviscerating people. Please. I would love that. Although, you know, a second with the Torchwood crew and they just, you know, run in all guns blazing and just turn it into pink mist.
Run it over with their transit van, whatever it is, their big Jeep.
With the unit Jeep.
Yeah.
With the Torchwood Jeep. I loved Miriam's performance. I can't say that enough.
Yeah, she's brilliant.
That turn with the where the VFX change, and also realizing how much of it was fucking prosthetic, that was just a model.
Practical, I know, it is insane. We were watching The Unleashed and seeing the bits where we thought it was CGI and it was a puppet. You know, Annie's brother watched it on Disney Plus in Brazil, and he thought it was all CGI. And Annie would had to film it and say, "Look, no, it was a puppet. Look at this." That was one of our first things when we saw this episode. Right from the off, was just like, "Wow, the money." You know, I know Russell keeps sort of saying, "Oh, you know, we've got a little bit more money. You know, it's not massive." That is a lot of money compared to what we've been seeing.
Well, I'm seeing people say that an entire series, he was running the show previously, was the budget for that one episode that we just watched. And it looks like it.
Yeah.
And like when they showed the fact they built, you know, the Noble's house.
They built
the
rocket. And they built the Noble's house.
And they built the rocket. They built the legs of the rocket.
Yeah. Fucking bonkers. And then obviously you've got this fantastic creature. You know, that was like Star Wars, you know, level prosthetics and puppeteering, and watching The Unleashed amazing. And seeing how they brought it to life. Phenomenal. I mean, hats off to all of the people, not only involved in the creation of it, but the puppeteering of it, because it was such a full-blooded character on screen. And I think because, you know, it was there, it was alive. For people to react with. Just amazing. Just wow. You know, when you compare that to like the Sea Devils in Legend of the Sea Devils, you know, we loved the Sea Devils in Legend of the Sea Devils because they looked like the old Sea Devils. But to see the amount of, I mean, I know that was a very troubled production and they didn't have long to, you know, they couldn't do animatronics and all that sort of stuff. But it's, wow, it's like chalk and cheese, you know, the level of realism. Just phenomenal. I absolutely loved the Meep. And like you said, I'm so glad that they didn't kill off the character. They kept them alive so that hopefully they'll return in the future. But it's interesting what you said about, you know, the heel turn, because like, you know, we all knew that was coming if you know the story. But what I thought when we were watching it up until that point, I was like, oh, this is a great episode to show my nephews. I think they'll love this because the Meep is such a fun, cuddly character. They're going to love this. As soon as the Meep turns bad and it has that horrible demonic face, I was like, shit, I think my nephews might be a bit scared if they
but
see
this. But I still think that there's a levity to it with Miriam's performance because, there is still a comic, it probably doesn't help that it's an adaptation, but I don't think anyone watching this for a second thinks that, you know, the Meep's going to get away with this at the end.
Yeah.
It's like almost so ridiculous, the change from, you know, poor little Meep with its hand and stuff.
Yeah.
So just this fucking thing. You know, you just think...
You sounded like Crack Fox from Mighty Boosh.
Can't be more of them... Crack. Yeah, I did Towley then. Sorry, that was supposed to be Crack Fox. I think it's a great episode to show. And I was thinking this because I was hanging out with
some
five-year-old I was hanging out with a five-year-old in Australia. Don't know where the parents were. And I was talking to the dad and I was like, look, Doctor Who's about to come on and it's going to be on Disney Plus in Australia. And I think, you know, I was four when I got into Doctor Who. I think he'll love it. And he loves dinosaurs. This is probably would be the scariest thing he's watched, but you know, he's made it through Lion King. He'll be fine.
Yeah.
You know, I reckon they'd be all right with Meep. Like,
yeah,
there's still that levity in the character that even when they turn nasty and snarly.
Yeah.
It's still funny. It's still daft, you know?
I hope you get a text saying, thanks a lot, mate. You've, my kid's traumatized from watching that. So
traumatized for life.
Yeah.
What else? I mean, we've talked about the Meep as just being superb.
Meep was amazing. The Roth Warriors, again, a fantastic practical monster.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's a great design in the original comics. But I loved the, and I think we talked about this before. I love how they felt kind of clunky and they felt like the prosthetics were very uncomfortable and restrictive. Yeah. And it was like, wow, that is such a Doctor Who monster. You know, it looked it looked like a man in a suit. And like when they
The mouth's moving. I assumed that was added on afterwards, but then to see them talking in the behind the scenes, and there's lovely bit where one of them is, you know, talking in a very clipped manner, you know, so I've got my eyes here and and he's the same, and it pans over and the other Warth Warrior sat there and just goes, hello, puts his claw up. It was lovely.
Really good.
I want to say congratulations to King of the Monsters Paul Casey for upgrading from third Cyberman on the left to now the creature choreographer on Doctor Who.
That was
so
cool.
Which is fabulous to see.
Yeah, that's great. Fair play to him.
It was nice seeing him and Danny Hargreaves. You know, it's like that was almost as much of a nostalgia hit than having David and Catherine back.
Yeah, it was lovely having all that behind the scenes stuff back. And I think it had been enough time since we had another series, because I do remember sort of watching the series six stuff. I'd sort of stopped really watching Confidential by that point because it felt like we've seen a lot of this before. You know, we know how green screen works. We know how wire work stuff works, you know, and it felt more like, well, let's just follow Matt and Karen around arsing about. And, you know, at that point, that wasn't really what I was there for. So I think now it's been, you know, 10 years later and technology has evolved so much in that short amount of space. It's cool to see all that stuff again anew.
Absolutely.
I mean, crikey, you know, just seeing the behind the scenes for how they made the Meep and how they made the Wrath Warriors. Just absolutely bonkers. And I loved with the Wrath Warriors, you know, they had the illuminated eyes. And then when they got killed, you know, the eyes went dark. Yeah, it was great. Just little details like that. And obviously the action sequence was incredible with the unit troops in the street where they're blowing everything up. That was brilliant. And obviously when they're blowing up the house, fantastically directed by Rachel Talalay.
Yeah.
I mean, God, she's so good. You know, I hope she comes back to do more. And I mean,
I think she should be a mainstay. I think she should be like Graham Harper. Like
every time Dougie Canfield, you need
exactly, a big episode to kick a season off or to close one off, or, you know, something with a bit of an injection of energy in the middle of a season. At any point, just fucking bring Rachel Talalay back.
Yeah, and it was revealed in the most recent DWM that she had just been undergoing chemotherapy.
Jeez.
Yeah, and she sort of said when she got the interview for the job, you know, she said she had to wear a wig and stuff. She didn't want them to know that she'd been ill. And now she's in remission, I think.
Fabulous.
Yeah, and she sort of said, you know, it was getting the job on Doctor Who, she was like, it sort of kept her going and it gave her the strength to like, no, I you know, I'm gonna do this. Absolutely amazing. What an incredible woman to, you know, because she lives in Canada, I think. So, you know, to undergo all that and then come all the way over to the UK and do this huge shoot. I mean, bloody hell, hats off to her. What an amazing woman.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I mean, just really, really lovely direction. The whole action sequence was amazing. When the Wrath Warriors started flying, we were like, whoa, you know, we had a little cheer. That was so clever.
I thought of you when that happened, because your whole thing, you know, all the way through the Chibnall and Whittaker era was like, there aren't enough monsters.
Yes.
And all, like, as a result, things you can't make toys of.
Yes.
And I immediately thought that Wrath Warriors with flying action or whatever,
themselves. Exactly, that's it. You know, you have your standard one, you have the one with the wings, you know, it's one sculpt, you just swap the bits out the back. Obviously, a lot of thought has gone into that.
Clearly.
You know, how can we market this? You know, how can we get kids wanting toys? Bugger the kids, I want them. I want my Wrath Warrior.
A Wrath Warrior toy,
And a Beat the Meat plushie that goes... And a Beat the Meat plushie
that goes...
Yeah.
And I also want a playset of that fucking gorgeous TARDIS interior.
Well, I'm sorry, Billy, but that's probably going to be about £1,000 because of how bloody big it is. Do a Kickstarter. Do a Haslabs type thing.
Put me down for the one with the colour-changing LEDs.
Yes.
Man, I did see an interesting tweet from somebody who said it looks very empty and very sort of cavernous.
Yeah.
And I agree with that, but I don't think it's going to stay like that for long. Because, you know, we know at least that it gets a form of a music playing device in there.
Yeah.
I'm sure there will be at least a hat stand. I mean, with the amount of outfits that the 15th Doctor is wearing, there's probably going to be a fucking
wardrobe, you know, one of those that
they have on like tours where like all of Taylor Swift's outfits get pushed into her dressing room. There'll be one of those, like the cat.
Yeah. That was my one complaint when we looked at it. I was like, I haven't got one of these coat stands. You know, it needs to be in there. Gotta have the coat stand. But it was like someone had taken the late 80s TARDIS, like the late Davison into McCoy TARDIS, and had just gone, boom, you know, let's just throw all the money in it. Because the rotor, or the central column, you know, that middle bit is very much like a modernized version of the 80s one. Just a stunning TARDIS. You know, proper roundels, which, you know, We've been wanting forever because we all like the round things. You know, Russell T Davies, I think, said on the podcast, someone clipped it. He said that the reason why the TARDIS looks like that is because he loved the Clara TARDIS and the Fugitive Doctor TARDIS in more recent years. He said, I liked that sort of gleaming white look. Of course, it's classic. There's a reason why these things have lasted the test of time. So, yeah, but what a stunning, stunning TARDIS. And, like, with all the lights going on and, you know, real good buttons and stuff, you know, although the console
proper
is...
Proper buttons.
Yeah, although it's, like, cobbled together, it's cobbled together in, like, a cohesive way. It doesn't feel like someone's just chucked a load of old tat on it, you know? It just, really, really works. Beautiful. Someone said, you know, is this the best console since 1963? Someone tweeted that at me. I forget your name because I haven't got Twitter up. And I said, oh, maybe. But someone did show a picture of the Peter Capaldi one. And I do love that Capaldi one. I've got to say. And I think we've got an emotional connection with that one because we were there. So
we were there, yeah.
Until the BBC invite us to this new one. Wink, wink.
It's not our favourite.
It's not our favourite.
I loved it. I thought it was beautiful. I don't know if this is the case, but it almost felt like that was David's first genuine reaction to seeing the set.
Yeah.
That, you know, he and great idea having him
run
laps around it.
Yeah, I think that was David's idea. Scale. I think from DWM, I think he said, oh, I'm going to run around it. Super excited. And I think Richard Tulele said,
great idea.
He slightly regretted it after like the fifth take when he was like,
I'm sure.
I'm in my 50s, so I forgot cavernous. About this.
Yeah. Also, speaking on that, another beautiful piece of dialogue. You can get away with wearing skinny suits until 35 and no further was fabulous.
Great.
I think it's my favourite TARDIS interior of the new series.
Yeah.
I think it is just gorgeous.
It's superb.
It's the part of my, you know, again, classic fan purist brain does kind of go, it doesn't need a fucking coffee machine in the console. You know, it's like having the bloody Jammy Dodger dispenser. But then at the same time, I'm sure that's going to be used for a lot more than just, you know, making coffee.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, a funny little gag. Maybe hot chocolate, maybe a little maybe a little cappuccino.
I'd watched the other day, and obviously An Adventure in Space and Time was on telly the other day. Mm. And I watched a bit over lunch because I wanted to see, I didn't watch it when it went out live, I wanted to see how they dealt with cutting the Unearthly Child sequences.
Yes.
And there was a moment where William Hartnell sees the console room for the first time, and, you know, everyone's fawning over how wonderful it looks. And he turns around and says, oh, too bloody big, it takes up half the studio. And that was my first thought when they show the new console. I was like, somewhere William Hartnell was going, it's too bloody big, it's taking up all studio.
Sure, he's complaining about a lot more than that to do with the new series of Doctor Who. I thought it was beautiful. I thought it was fabulous. I loved just seeing a sliver of it through the door.
Yes.
Because I actually went to Stell like, oh, you can see a bit of it. It's funny because, you know, it goes to show leaks are obviously annoying and in many respects can be detrimental to a production. And also it's really humiliating and, you know, to have your work put out there when it's not shown in its best light. If it's a shaky iPhone picture taken at the side of a set or somebody snapping photos of a a rough, you know, CAD design of what it's supposed to look like or whatever. Yeah. But regardless, seeing, because we obviously we hadn't seen it in its full beauty.
Yeah.
Seeing it as it's supposed to be seen for the first time and just being able to see just a crack through the door of what is about to get revealed to us was enough for me to sort of be like, leaks don't really matter when it comes to stuff like that, because I'm still just as awed and wowed by it, seeing it, you know?
Exactly, yeah. Nothing compares to seeing it properly. Yeah, it's stunning. And I loved the idea that it had changed whilst the Doctor was out on this adventure. Why has it changed? You know, I wonder if that's going to be a plot point. You know, because obviously the mystery of the Doctor's face, you know, is looming over this story.
So that is clearly the thread for this series. That is the story, is why this face? Why has it come back? Donna suggests it's to say goodbye.
Yeah.
Maybe it's, you know, a kind of curatory, you know, revisiting a couple of the old favourites sort of thing.
Yeah.
Or maybe, you know, there's something slightly bigger at play. I think, you know, you've said from the start that you think it's the toy maker that has a hand in the Doctor looking this way. Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see how far back that goes in the story with when the toy maker made that happen. Yeah.
Now, last episode, we did our predictions and I said, oh, I wonder if we'll get a flashback to Hartnell and the Toymaker. Now, at the end of The Daleks in Colour, there were all these sequences from other stories. But in particular, there was bits from The Celestial Toymaker and they played Neil Patrick Harris laughing over the top and the regeneration sound. And I thought this scene in particular looks very crisp compared to some of the other colour sequences in that montage. Right. I thought, I wonder if that's been colourised and they're going to incorporate it into the episode.
I did notice that it seemed to be the longest segment of any of those clips they showed, and obviously it had dialogue.
Yeah.
I thought that was interesting as well. I did notice the laughter.
Very quietly, there's a bit of regeneration noise and then you can hear him going
very interesting,
exciting. And we had another little wonder what that means with the Meep. When the Meep gets taken away, they turn around and say, oh, you know, wait until the boss hears about this, or whatever the line is. And so David has said in the InVision commentary, he said that is something that will come back in Shooty's era, and even he doesn't know well, that's all about. So that's great. So I'm looking forward to finding out what that is.
The boss. So somebody compiling a load of Doctor Who villains together to try and take the Doctor out. Or there was a whole thing about a creature with two hearts is quite rare.
Yeah.
And the Meep. There was a thing made about the Meep having two hearts.
That's right. Yeah, the Meep story had two hearts. Yeah.
So, you know, what's the date? 26th of November, 2023, excuse me. I'm going to say it's the Rani.
Ooh, interesting.
I'm going to say that the Rani is collecting creatures with two hearts as part of her menagerie.
Oh, is she sticking them behind roundels again? In the
TARDIS? I hope so.
I feel
for the Dimensions in Time commentary currently available on com/TheReviewOfDeath.
If her console room is just the same as the Doctor's, I feel very sorry for the poor. Yeah, I feel very sorry for the poor bugger who's got to put all those roundels in. He'd be like, oh God, how am I going to get this one up here? For feck's sake, get the ladder out.
All the ones on the roof are like the Cretatine and the Reapers and all the flying ones. Yeah, and
just
all the ones.
Fly yourself up there, go on.
The Meep is on the ground level.
Yeah. Perfect. You know. Perfect.
Shall we turn to Twitter and just have a look?
Yes, let's see what people had to say.
Have said about this story. So thanks very much to everybody who sent in their thoughts and feelings on Doctor Who and the Star Beast. If I can find it here. Oscar Groucho says, a glorious madcap adventure hiding a quiet meditation on how we define ourselves and the way fate can turn us into our better selves despite what curveballs are thrown our way. My late father would have adored it. Witty and full of heart, wearing its two hearts on its sleeve. Bradley Edward Charles says, it was all right. Maybe I'll enjoy it more on a rewatch, but I found the ending a little tricky. It was classic RTD, a Deus Ex Machina resolution that is highly convenient. Plus, the pace didn't slow down at all. It was scene after scene with no room to breathe. I think what you were saying earlier about there being a couple of scenes without music.
Yeah.
I think sometimes that's all it needs because... Yeah. After the sort of mad rush of, oh, we're in this story and suddenly things are happening and da-da-da-da, to yeah. then have the Doctor and Sean have a debrief in the taxi with no music
yeah.
was enough for me to sort of catch my breath and go, right, I'm ready yeah. for more.
And also that scene with the Doctor and Shirley, you know, that quiet little conversation that they had. I think pacing-wise, yeah, later on, I think once the Meep gets into the Noble's house, it is like, right... Almost like Sean putting his foot down on the accelerator of that taxi, and it's just like, whoom,
yeah,
we're off.
Right.
I think it's there you don't quite get the pauses for breath, but it didn't bother me. I got to say, I thought pacing wise it was fine. Other than like what we've said about the ending was a bit quick.
Yes, I agree. Orlando Hall Thorpe says, loved it. Watch it with my two trans siblings and it was absolutely joyous. This is why representation matters. Lovely. Fabulous. Elliot Dyson absolutely loved it. Thumbs up all the way. The Sonic Screwdriver Shield seemed a little bit overpowered, but I'm sure Russell and the other writers will be more than capable in making sure it stays balanced. A very emotional ride with many ups and downs and a few laughs too. I did see somebody in the chat earlier... Yeah. Say that maybe this is Russell making the Sonic really overpowered so that Shooty doesn't get one.
Well, but maybe. Then... But we know next week that the Sonic Screwdriver, I don't think the Doctor's got the Sonic. I think he's on his own because
right.
we've seen that image with the Sonic Screwdriver in the lock of the TARDIS.
Ah,
and then
yes.
the TARDIS goes. So does it take the Sonic Screwdriver with
it? Must do.
It.
Interesting. Louis Morehouse says, really enjoyed it, even if I did have to wait until after the live broadcast to watch it with audio description. Really good episode, some lovely 14 Doctor moments. Love the Meep not understanding toys. What's not to
yeah.
love there?
Oh, that bit when
still,
you pulled his tummy out.
that was fabulous. But still not really keen on the new theme tune.
Okay.
Fair enough. I think it probably will be a grower for some people. I
yeah.
get the kind of overly whimsy aspects of it might be a bit grating to some people.
Okay.
And I think they were for us initially when we were
yes.
sort of
oh, yeah.
hearing the orchestral version. But
yeah.
I don't think that orchestra were really locked in at all that night.
No.
I think there was a little bit of under rehearsing to blame for how
yeah.
some of those tunes came across.
And it wasn't, you know, it wasn't the Welsh National Orchestra. It wasn't the people that play it for the TV series.
Yes.
So this is probably, you know, like you said, they probably didn't have an awful lot of time with the material. And obviously, to try and do something like that live, where there's so much synth and stuff as well, you know, it's bad enough, you know, just, I imagine, trying to conduct an orchestra and get them to stay together, let alone then suddenly having some buggers on, like, Macs and stuff saying, well, hang on a minute, I've got to sync up, press and play, and all this weird
yeah.
stuff that they have to do. So I can imagine that it's not easy.
And then some dickhead up in the rafters with a microphone going,
yeah. Who's that
Tony
wanking?
Flyer says, symphonic, silly, clever, joyous, and wonderful nods to the past, energy of the present, hints of the future, and every note superb, exactly what an anniversary should be. Prison Boss, if we want to get granular, I'd say I fully enjoyed 5/6 of it. Wow.
Okay.
This is a proper Doctor Who fan commenting here. The resolution to Donna's head bomb gave some Moffaty flashbacks, but let's face it, it was fantastic. Visually stunning, emotional, and grounded in reality like all Doctor Who should be. And I that is a perfect way of putting it. In the face of everything that slightly wound me up, I
yeah.
just have to say, let's face it, it was great.
Yeah.
Like, regardless of all those things,
oh, yeah.
it was fantastic.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was brilliant because, you know, sometimes, especially watching Doctor Who with Jonathan, there's a moment of trepidation because I always look worried that I'm going to look over to his side of the room and he's going to be a bit stony-faced.
He's going to have a cloud over his head.
Yeah, and he was smiling throughout the whole thing.
Oh, excellent.
And he was buzzing. I was buzzing. It was... I haven't felt this... happy about watching new Doctor Who in years. I mean, comparing last night's situation to when all three of us watched The Power of the Doctor.
Power of the Doctor.
I mean, my mum fell asleep when watching Power of the Doctor. I don't think she fell asleep last night. She watched it on her own at her house, and she texted my brother. And I think she enjoyed it. I don't know if she completely understood what was going on, but that's mum watching Doctor Who in a nutshell, really. But she did like, she liked the meep. She said, oh, the meep was cute.
There we go. That's all we want to know.
Yeah.
Dalek Tam says, can't say I was a massive fan. Wanted more Roth Warriors and more Beep Mayhem, but they skipped a lot of that to focus on reintroducing the Temple Noble family, which I understand, but it felt uneven and the monsters came second. Also, the sound mixing was gash. I think that's something that a lot of people are noticing, is that the sound was a bit cocked up,
right,
which is interesting. Viking Schism says, going to have to go middle. I enjoyed it mostly, but the resolutions to stuff like Donna's memories felt pretty weak. Also, didn't like the Sonic being able to make a force field out of nowhere. Other abilities were okay. Beep the Meep was a highlight, as expected. Ivy says, in the middle, I think it was a fun standalone story with some gold moments, but it feels like it has some missing pieces that I think will all click together once we see the other two. But beyond that, it all seems overwhelmingly positive from folks.
Good.
Really seem to enjoy it. You know, all the grievances aside, it just seems like everybody's going, it was bloody marvellous, whatever we might think of it, you know.
Fantastic.
It's faults, you know, people seem to really, really love it.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if there's really anything else that we need to add, because we
no, I mean, do you want to talk a little bit about next week, because there was a clip in Doctor Who Unleashed,
yeah,
which showed us,
and there was a Next Time trailer on YouTube. Did you see that?
Yes.
Good.
I did, because I was expecting Next Time trailer, but I guess the way that it's sort of presented on Disney Plus is like, well, you know, it's sort of pointless having a Next Time trailer when it's just going to be on streaming kind of permanently in that space, you know.
Yeah,
kind of makes more sense to have it for like a, I don't know, like a usual sort of televisual broadcast sort of thing.
Before we go on, I've got to say, Macra has very kindly donated £10.
Bloody hell.
And has said, a fantastic pod as usual, love the live format, hope it stays for shooty series. There we go.
Well,
that's
you may think that, but I couldn't possibly comment.
It all depends on what time Billy's got to get up in the morning.
That's exactly. So I don't think we're going to be able to do this next Sunday, but we will endeavour to get it out as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
But thank you very much, Macro. That is incredibly generous of you. Yeah, I thought it was interesting showing that clip from Wild Blue Yonder with a set that we haven't actually seen before.
Yeah.
Like an entirely different set.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know if we've maybe over-egged that story slightly. I mean, we said in the lead up to it, we don't know anything about it. We know more about the stories either side.
Yeah.
But then maybe that's just because it's studio bound in terms of like stuff to show, like visual flair and like, whoa, look at where we are.
Yeah.
Maybe there's less of that to show off.
Yeah.
But I don't know. How do you feel about it now? Are you still on the sort of same wavelength that it's going to be kind of mad is going to happen?
Yeah, I think it might be quite good. I watched the Next Time trailer, only saw it this morning actually before we recorded this, and you know, again, keeping everything very close to its chest, you know, it seems very sort of Ark in Space, that they're just the only ones there, and it feels very isolated, and you know, lots of long empty corridors, and then right at the end, you know, there's that bit where Donna says like, what are they, and then it cuts off and you're like, ooh. Yeah, what are they? We're going to see some cool monster. Lee Smith has just put in the chat, you know, Rusty Davies says it's darker. So, yeah, hopefully it's going to be something scary. Because this one wasn't scary, but it was thrilling. And I think the meep could have been scary for some kids, because I certainly think my nephews would probably go, ugh. I'm still looking forward to it. And I think from the clip that we saw on Doctor Who Unleashed, you know, the Doctor being very doctory, you know, and doing the stuff that we like to see the Doctor doing, the investigative stuff, you know, and, you know, licking the whatever that stuff was, you know, to see what it's, you know, composed of and all that kind of stuff, you know. I'm looking forward to it. So Macaulay's just put 10th/14th Doctor still licking stuff.
Oh yes.
So I'm still excited for it, because it is the one that is shrouded in mystery. And, you know, that bit with the coffee at the end of this story was like Chekhov's coffee, wasn't it, really? When it was like, you knew she was going to, that coffee was going straight in the TARDIS console.
I loved,
they were going to go off to God knows where.
From Catherine Tate, and the timing of that explosion was just comic gold. I love that.
So good.
That was really, really funny.
Yeah.
So let's see what the Wild Blue Yonder has in store for us. Next week, I'm very excited. I'm really, really buzzing with Doctor Who coming off the back of last night or this
morning.
It was exactly the shot in the arm that I expected it to be, and then it over delivered on the scale and the spectacle.
And the spectacle, definitely, yeah.
And the performances of David and Catherine, and obviously everybody else who was in it as well. I thought Yasmin Finney was fantastic, and her dynamic with Catherine Tate on screen was brilliant.
It was
fabulous, and I think that the finale in particular I think is going to be really special this year. I just feel like it's just going to pay off beautifully in that last episode. So we've got the mystery of what's to come next week still looming.
Fantastic.
We'll come to that.
Lovely stuff. Well, in that case, I think this is probably a good time to call it there.
You've got to go off and see Nicola Bryant.
I got to go to Western and see Nicola Bryant. One thing that we should say, like you already mentioned, next week we need to try and work out between the two of us when exactly we're going to record or how we're going to do it. So it might not be in this format as it is today, but just keep your eyes on socials. Just keep checking Twitter and Instagram and all those places where we post stuff. Or if you're a patron, you know, check the Discord because we'll chuck it in there as well. Just find out what we're talking about next week. But like you said, this is a great start to the new era of Doctor Who. Really, really buzzing to be a fan again. Fantastic stuff. So thank you all for joining us this morning. It's been lovely having you all here and seeing you all in the chat and getting to interact with you. Bradley Willard says, it's the Wirin calling it. I would love the Wirin to come back.
Ooh.
Could you imagine how good they would look in the new series?
Yeah.
That'd be fantastic. Wow, that'd be really spooky because they could do some really scary stuff with them. So there we go. See you next time for The Wild Blue Yonder. Enjoy next week's episode, and we'll see you all then. Thanks for joining us. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.